This episode is brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Cambie. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider. Delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Cambie,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to the Now Hear This, Cambie podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Martina Baker, and this is what's happening this week in our community. An unknown number of Clackamas County ballots for the May 17th primary elections were sent and returned with defective barcodes, officials reported this week, an error that will cost the county extra money and could delay results. Longtime clerk Sherry Hall announced Wednesday that an error by the county's contracted printer had caused the barcodes on some ballots to be blurred and unreadable by the automatic processing equipment. Election officials didn't notice the error before the ballots were sent to voters. The ballots are valid and will be counted, Hall assured voters in the news release, but will have to be tallied manually in a routine but painstaking process that officials expect will add to the already heavy workload on county elections personnel. Under this process, which has been routinely used in the past for ballots damaged in the mail or by the voters themselves, at least two election workers of different political parties will participate in the process of copying the votes of the defective ballots onto new ballots for processing. Election observers will witness the process and the county will keep the damaged ballots on file, Hall said. The clerk said she did not know how many ballots were affected by the printing error, but told the Oregonian that approximately 6 in 10 of the first 400 ballots the county attempted to process Wednesday were rejected. It is our objective to count every validly cast vote in this election and every election. Our voters are entitled to expect nothing less, Hall stated. We have plans and procedures in place to competently and correctly respond to this situation and many others. The defective barcodes do not identify voters, nor do they relate in any way to voters' selections or candidates or measures, Hall said. The code merely identifies the ballot style so that the equipment can tally the votes in the correct elections. Clackamas County Chair Tootie Smith said in a statement Friday that she was aghast when she heard about the misprints. Many questions came through my mind. Is my ballot secure? Will my vote count? How can I trust government to do what is right? She said. Nothing is more honorable and sacred than the integrity of elections and full trust in the outcome. Regardless of intent or innocence of a mistake, there will be lingering questions about this election and the process used to remedy the situation. This is not the first time Clackamas County has suffered technical woes during a hotly anticipated election cycle. Indeed, just 2 years ago, the clerk's office reported an equipment failure with an automatic envelope opener mere hours before the polls closed on election day, though the issue ultimately did not impact the county's ability to tally or report results. Other more serious issues include a 2010 printing error affecting a commissioner's race that cost the county more than $100,000 in reprinting costs, and the hiring of a temporary elections worker in 2013 who was later convicted of election fraud for filling in blank spaces on two ballots with Republican candidates. In other election news, former House Republican leader and Canby State Representative Christine Drazen has moved to the top of a crowded field of GOP candidates for Oregon governor, with less than 2 weeks left before the May 17th primary election, according to a new independent poll. About 19% of the 514 likely Republican voters who responded to the poll chose Christine Drazen, who represented Canby's House District in the Oregon legislature until this spring. Former Oregon Republican Party Chair Bob Tiernan came in second with 14%, and 2016 nominee Bud Pierce, who led a previous poll, fell to 9.5%. Trey Rosser, Drazen's campaign manager, said in a statement that the poll from Salem-based Nelson Research shows Drazen has established herself as the clear frontrunner. While today's poll results are encouraging, the only poll that matters is the one that arrives at 8 p.m. on May 17th, he said. We are confident that voters will continue to recognize that Christine is the only candidate with the leadership, experience, and vision to start leading our state in a new direction on day one. The poll, conducted April 29th to May 2nd, also found that more than a quarter of Republicans still haven't decided who to vote for. That's down from a few weeks ago, when more than two-thirds of voters hadn't made up their minds in a poll by the same firm. Voters have until 8 p.m. Tuesday, May 17th, to return their ballots to a drop box or mail them. For the first time this year, ballots mailed and postmarked by Election Day will be counted. So far, more than 70,000 Oregon voters, about 2.5% of those eligible, have returned their ballots. That includes more than 18,000 Republicans eligible to vote in the GOP primary for governor. 19 Republicans are running for governor, though the poll asked about only 14 of them. The eventual nominee is likely to receive just a fraction of the primary vote because of the size of the field. Among Democrats, former House Speaker Tina Kotek and State Treasurer Tobias Reed are essentially waging a one-on-one primary despite a field of 15 candidates. The eventual Democratic and Republican nominees will likely face a three-way race with Betsy Johnson, a former Democratic state senator, now running a well-funded independent campaign for governor. As a non-affiliated candidate, Johnson must gather about 24,000 signatures from Oregon voters by August 30th to qualify for the ballot. Canby School District has promoted two of its own staff members to fill key leadership positions. As of July 1st, Canby High School Assistant Principal Carrie Sloan will move into the high school principal role, and Eklis Elementary Principal Andy McKeon will become the district's Director of Human Resources. We are really excited for Carrie and Andy to fill these roles, Superintendent Dr. Aaron Downs said. Our students will benefit from their experience, integrity, and expertise. Current high school principal Greg Dinsay announced his retirement earlier this year, and current HR director Michelle Riddell will be taking on the same role a little closer to home in the North Clackamas School District this summer. District leaders said Sloan consistently rose to the top throughout an extensive interview process for the high school principal position. Her prior experience includes teaching English language arts and serving as the dean of students at Aloha High School before becoming associate principal at Canby High. Down said Sloan understands the needs at Canby High and has a passion for that community and Canby as a whole. I'm honored to serve as the next principal of Canby High School, Sloan said. I look forward to partnering with students, staff, and the community to build upon the strong tradition of excellence. Roll Cougs! Prior to making a decision, leaders sought input from high school staff, parents, the community, and students. Staff, parents, and the community agreed the high school needs a strong instructional leader with high academic standards, according to Director of Communications Kristen Wohlers. They also wanted to see an excellent communicator and someone who creates a safe, welcoming environment for all. Students hoped for someone who would develop strong connections. We believe Carrie checks all of those boxes, Wohlers said, and she is excited to get to know the community in a new way. District leaders are also confident in their decision to promote McKeon, who has worked in the field of education for more than 20 years. He is highly respected in the district, and one of his many strengths is hiring and managing staff, Wohlers said. Also, his relational skills are essential for a position like this. We are excited for him to join the district office team and expand his impact. The shift will mark a significant transition for the Eccles community, which has thrived under McKeon's leadership for almost a decade. After serving nearly 10 years at Eccles, I am excited to take on this new role as the Human Resources Director for the Camby School District, McKeon said. It has been my honor to serve as the principal of Eccles. I will forever be grateful for the staff, students, and community of Eccles for supporting me and shaping me into the leader I am today. Camby School District will begin searching for replacements for the two staffers right away. A driver faces several charges, including DUII, after he allegedly crashed into several parked cars in Oregon City on Thursday. Police said they were called to the Southridge Shopping Center on Beaver Creek Road just after 5:30 p.m. When officers arrived, they found 12 vehicles had been crashed into by a white work truck. The driver of the work truck was taken to the hospital. His name was not released. He was cited for DUII, reckless endangering, and reckless driving. The criminal case will be handled by the Clackamas County District Attorney's Office, according to Oregon City Police. We are thankful that no one else was injured during the incident, Oregon City Police said. For the video, find this story on our website at canbefirst.com. Cougar Country, hometown sports coverage is brought to you by Reif and Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm that Camby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. For the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter at Cougar Country OR and Instagram at Cougar Country POD. On a day where they honored a former All-State first teamer, the Camby Cougar softball team broke a three-game losing streak with a walk-off steal in the eighth inning by star Ava Carroll. The other two games the Cougars had planned, Tualatin and Lake Oswego, were rained out, leaving only the Pacer game still on the books. Coming off of a tough week prior that saw the Cougars lose three games by a combined 20 runs, the extra break was much appreciated. Before their matchup against Lake Ridge, the Cougars mourned the loss of Elisa Netter, a former All-State softball player and a pillar of the Canby community, who had passed away suddenly at the age of 51. Following the emotional moment, the Cougars and Pacers slugged it out on the field. Neither team was able to strangle away the lead for the first six innings. Camby managed to get runners on base, including stranding Abigail Loomis and Maddie Begege in the second inning, but were unable to drive them home. After the Cougars failed to score in the seventh, Loomis trotted back out into extra innings and continued right where she left off. The senior struck out the side with an immaculate inning. Incredibly, all nine pitches Loomis threw in the eighth were strikes. In fact, Camby's ace struck out eight of the last nine batters she faced. Carroll singled to begin the inning, then advanced to second on a Kenna Kraft single. After the Pacers picked up their second out, Carroll advanced to third off of a Loomis walk. With Kaylee Allen up to bat and two outs on the board, the coaches sent Carroll to steal home. When coach told me to steal home, I felt excited and confident because I knew the decision would win the game, Carroll said. While running home, I was a little nervous, but my confidence was through the roof. Carroll sprinted home, passing the unaware Lake Ridge catcher and winning the game for the Cougars. With the win, the Cougs improved to 14-5 on the season and jump up to number 3 in the OSAA rankings. They'll make up their Lake Oswego rainout on Monday before facing two top 5 opponents to round out the week at number 5, Oregon City and number 1, Tigard.
Hey, Frankie, I've loved working on this show with you and all, but I think it's time I go all in on becoming a full-time gamer.
Oh, yeah? That's great, but aren't you always talking about getting owned by, like, 11-year-olds in Warzone and stuff
No. That was because my upload speeds, remember? Mm. Whenever I had to drop on someone, I would get destroyed because of the internet lag.
Right. Internet lag.
Anyway, that all changed when I switched to DirectLink. My upload speeds are way faster now, and my online rank has improved a ton. Bro, I'm gonna be Twitch famous.
I'm glad to hear it. And you know, just in case, if the whole professional gamer thing doesn't work out, it will help you with uploading files for the show.
Not a chance, my man. And hey, when I become famous and bring in the big bucks from that sweet, sweet Twitch contract, you'll be the first to hear, I told you so. I've got the skills, and now I've got the reliable internet. It's just a matter of time.
I'm rooting for you, buddy. Hey, before all that, how about you remind our listeners how they can get the best and fastest upload speeds in Canby?
Just go to directlink.coop/internet or call them at 503-266-8111, then pick the plan that's right for you. Every speed, not just their top tiers, come with unlimited data and upload speeds up to 10 times faster than other providers. Give them a call, and just like my Twitch career, you won't be disappointed.
Oh my gosh.
This is Roz Mason, and I'm running for State Senate District 26, which now includes Canby. I know we need affordable housing, a strong local economy, and to face climate challenges of wildfire and heat waves like last year's that hit 118 in the Dalles where I live. Climate courage also includes upsides, like becoming more energy independent using renewables and helping our district get in on innovative technology and manufacturing jobs. I'm visiting Canby and Sandy April 14th through 16th. I'd love to see you. Visit masonfororegon.com for info and to get a yard sign. Paid for by Mason for Oregon.
Okay, so for a very special Mother's Day themed Canby conversation today, excited to welcome on a woman named Anne. She recently retired here to Canby, Oregon. She is a retired longtime prosecutor and county government employee, but I guess I just usually call her Mom. Hey, Mom. Welcome onto the show. So this is, I guess, because I didn't, you know, want to have to do anything else. So this is my Mother's Day gift to you. You've been wanting to do this for a while.
I have.
Yeah. Why don't you tell people why?
Okay. So when I came up with this idea to interview you, because I said you do all kinds of interviews of interesting people, mm-hmm. Your very spontaneous reaction was, why would anyone want to know anything about me?
Right.
And I said, because you're as interesting as the people you interview. But more importantly, if I can say it, and if you don't want it in there,
I can always
edit it out.
Yeah.
Correct. So a few years ago, there was this group on social media, which we'll rename nameless, that said things about you, which you can handle, but they also said things about me, which I thought was really kind of funny because nobody really knows me except the few people at Canby Alliance Church, mm-hmm. or your wife's family. And so what they were basically concluding was just because we're from Kentucky, we do these illegal things.
Hmm.
And that really took me aback when I read that. And of course, I didn't make comments. I wasn't a member of the group. But I just thought that's so weird to stereotype people just because where they're from. And coincidentally, today is Derby Day,
mm-hmm.
the fastest 2 minutes in sports, the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. And Derby is a wonderful time to be in Kentucky. So it's just, I haven't obsessed about it. It's not on my mind every day. But I just thought maybe people should know who you are, this person they thought was someone else just because he hails from Kentucky.
Hmm.
So when we lived in Kentucky before we moved to Maine, of course you had, you know, my family had 10 people, your dad's family, and your dad's also an attorney, had 8 people. So you were surrounded by all these high achieving people in Kentucky. And then we moved to Maine and then you moved out here. And I kind of wanted to start with Maine and how your life in Maine was, because you did things in Maine you can't do here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we lived in a town that had an annual snowfall of 120 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And then you chose to come out here, and you've been out here how many years?
Almost 10. It was 2013. So.
And I how old were you?
When I moved out here?
Mm-hmm.
23.
Yeah, you were
like
very young.
Yeah.
You had just graduated from University of Maine from the Honors College with awards in journalism,
mm-hmm.
and chose to pick up from that life. And I was there prosecuting,
mm-hmm.
and your younger brother was still there, and you came out here because why?
Well, I want to just, my concern with this whole thing, because you mentioned, you know, the negative Nancy crowd, the people that are, you know, stereotype and don't get to know people and just make assumptions about people, are such a tiny, tiny group. You know, it's like 10 people, if that. And my concern is the vast majority of people that think I'm likable and interesting will change their minds when they find out more about me. So that's my big concern. The air of mystery and coolness that comes with the anonymity of what I do.
You want them to see you as James Bond.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of people do think of me as James Bond. I get that a lot from people. Like,
well, so what you would prefer is this be the end of my Mother's Day gift.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, I'm just putting it out there. I mean, I already said I'd do it, this recording or whatever, but that's just my concern. So,
what's valid?
Yeah.
You know, it's taken, you're 33, so it's taken me 33 years.
Yeah.
To want to talk about who you are.
Sure. I get that. I came out here just on a whim when I was still in college and was working a summer at Canby Grove and met a lot of cool people, including a woman that I came to really like, and she was from out here. And so we started dating after that summer, long distance. She was in college in Missouri, and I went back to Maine, and then we got engaged the next summer, and then married the summer after that at Canby Grove.
Out here in Canby, yeah.
Yeah, at Canby Grove. So and Canby Grove was going through a lot of different stuff. The owners at that time ended up going into bankruptcy and had to sell, and so the camp was closed for, I think this was unrelated to us. It just happened to be a similar time period.
Night after your wedding.
After we got married and Joyelle graduated college in Missouri, we ended up moving back here because her family's all out here and ours is kind of scattered all over.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so you graduated in Maine. And as I said at the beginning, you graduated from what was called the Honors College in Maine. And you chose journalism, which has led you to so many career choices in your life and this podcast. So talk about that a bit. You loved being in the Honors College.
Did I? Yeah, the Honors College was I think I always felt like the sort of, because you always, you know, talk about how smart and gifted, you know, we are and whatever. And,
well, that's what your teacher said.
Well.
Not your mother.
Yeah. But it was sort of my concession to, because I just wanted to go to college. And
you wanted me to shut up.
Go to, yeah, a state school because it's easiest and cheapest and didn't really care. My brother, of course, wanted to go to Ivy League and all this stuff. And that just wasn't me. But I did the Honors College thing. Yeah. To show you. But yeah, it was just a liberal arts program that had a lot of literature. We read, you know, a lot of the classics and a lot of foundational religious texts, actually. It's interesting, the Bible and the Quran and stuff like that. I went into journalism because I always wanted to be a writer. And I didn't want to major in English because you know, I didn't think that that would be like a very marketable, you know, or I thought it was kind of a waste of money or whatever. Mm-hmm. But apparently I didn't apply that thinking all the way through to journalism and kind of look at the state of that job market. But
well, the future of print media versus where it was going digitally.
I always was kind of romanticized of the days of, you know, Edward R. Murrow and, mm-hmm. You know, Bob Woodward, Woodward and Bernstein, mm-hmm. and those kind of things. So I just thought it would be, yeah, in terms of my writing career, a little bit more kind of practical training and expertise than maybe English. This is like, you know, I already speak English. I'm not going to spend 4 years right. studying a language I already know. Didn't really ever plan to go into journalism as a profession until my junior year when I started working for the school newspaper. And that's when journalism, I think, really got into my blood. There was a lot of stuff happening at the college. There was a hit and run death that happened with a student. And the newspaper was really involved with helping, not help, I guess, not helping investigate that, because we and a lot of students kind of felt like the police weren't really doing a lot to figure out what happened there. And then there was budget cuts happening at the college, and we did a lot of...
I remember those were op-ed pieces too, yeah, articles and op-ed pieces.
Muddling that up for the college. So yeah, that's where, you know, it kind of got into my blood where I felt like, you know, a really small group of dedicated, talented people, or even just one person has the power to make a difference just by engaging people, by reporting information that other people don't have, and just by sharing information, you can make an impact, and hopefully a positive impact, on your community. Mm-hmm. I feel really lucky about, you said that I don't think that anyone listening to this, it's, you know, thinking, oh, maybe I'll go into journalism. it's not that kind of degree or career, certainly not now. But I feel very lucky that I've always been able to find places to work and places to use my skills, even if I had to kind of make it up, like with the Canby Current. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, but all along the way, you got feedback that proved that you did have a future in that from leaving UMaine with the award in journalism.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I...
And then you got awards for your reporting in Missouri, and you've had awards for reporting out here in Oregon. Because mm-hmm. you've written for a lot of newspapers out here, mm-hmm. including some special pieces for the Oregonian. So... journalism, even though, like you said, you wouldn't espouse that it's something everyone or anyone
yeah, and should, no one
right should follow your footsteps
if you have any
into,
other option
go there but you've enjoyed it and you've had successes in it, and that's actually led to why you wanted to do this, going back to what you said, one person interviewing or sharing stories of other people can provide assistance to other people in the community.
Well, I think that I've found, and what a lot of people found, is just it's a need. Can be in a lot of small towns. The term you're starting to hear more and more is a news desert, but that it's really a lack of engagement and knowledge about what's going on, about what the government is doing, about why things are the way they are. You know, some of these questions have complicated answers. Some of them have simple answers, but it's not something often that you know, the answers to those questions so often are not intuitive. You know, you have to have some type of access some type of maybe expertise, but if you're just and you kind of mentioned, you know, some groups and stuff, but I think you see that on social media nowadays where folks, you know, are upset about something and just throw a question out there, and people maybe with the best intentions but are sharing, you know, uninformed answers that are just in their intuition, feel like, you know, are why things are the way they are, but are not correct, and people just kind of spin out and go off in wrong directions. And I think that that can be potentially harmful to communities, potentially harmful to, you know, can create potentially toxic situations. But the other big thing with news and the importance of it, or some type of, you know, institution like that, is, and I think we saw this with the pandemic, when you have crises that happen, number one, you need a clearinghouse for information for people, but you also culturally need these through lines that you know, have the stories and have the people and the places and the things that are what make your community what it is. Mm-hmm. And that once you're on the other side of these crises or formative event or whatever it is, you still have that history and you have that shared knowledge. Or like a place like Cambie that's experiencing a lot of growth. You have those warehouses of knowledge and culture that help preserve and provide, I think, a stabilizing influence in a very positive way for the community. And I just feel like whether, you know, because obviously I've do this and have thought about it a lot and how to, I guess, justify why I spent so much time doing it. But I think a lot of people maybe, again, wouldn't articulate it to that depth that I just did, but have just seen it's good that we are doing what we're doing. It's they appreciate it. They like that there are people recording those stories and sharing them and just kind of reaffirming that good stuff happens here. You know, right. Important stuff happens here, and it's not being forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Well, the fact that you're very civic minded. And the reason I'm hesitating, I'm trying to think when and if I first saw that in you, like in high school or college. And college, you were very focused on academics and the newspaper, the college campus. Plus, you did a publication there, your Dulos publication, which was kind of like an investigative. There were some opinion articles in there, too, but an investigative link between your faith, which is very strong, and the science of evolution. Did I get that right or wrong?
That was one, yeah. So it was a magazine, right, that me and some other students started. That was kind of meant to be like an intellectual exploration of, yeah, different issues within Christianity. But yeah, one of the things we did was evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, Tyler. Read any good books lately?
Yeah, actually, I'm reading a really good one right now.
Awesome. What's it about?
It's kind of complicated, but there's like these two kids with an absent parent, and then this mysterious stranger shows up with his sinister accomplices, and they just start wreaking havoc in their lives. I think it's like a Faustian metaphor.
Wow, that sounds really dense.
It is.
Interesting, though. Who wrote it?
You know, I think it's like a doctor, starts with like an S or something, Sass, Sos.
Tyler, are you reading The Cat in the Hat?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to. It's taken me like 2 months to get this far.
Okay. Well, hey, whatever your interest or reading level, open the world of all things books at the Book Nook in downtown Cambie.
Yeah, guys, this local, independently owned and operated store is your one-stop shop for the latest releases and great deals on a huge variety of previously owned books, as well as games, art, and writing supplies and gifts.
They also do book clubs and game nights if you're looking for some fun, healthy activities right here in Cambie. And hey, you know, for you, Tyler, they have a really expansive selection of children's books.
Oh, cool. Anyway, check them out on Facebook and Instagram, online at booknookcambi.com, or stop by 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue and let their friendly staff introduce you to your new favorite read.
Hey, Frankie, why do you think I'd be interested in children's books?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
Hey, I'm AJ. I'm your local Oddmos franchise owner.
I'm Mike, co-founder of Oddmos.
And we're the hosts of The Odd Pod, a podcast about
life in the pizza industry. We're going to have on some franchisees. We're going to have some different vendors on. We're going to get a snapshot of what goes on behind the scenes in the pizza world.
Don't forget to tell them about the sports.
They're sports.
And the crazy wacky pizza that we have every Wednesday that we create. And we also have a special guest every week as well.
And I'm Gage, Odd Pod senior sports analyst.
Gage, who gave you that title?
Me.
Oh boy. Find us on Spotify and Apple Music and the Podbean.
And then it almost seemed like I see a transition to you, although your faith is still strong and you're a church member and your wife and family are all of the same mind. But like I had started to say a minute ago, you're very civic-minded, and the commitment to this community, clearly this is your home. This is where you intend to be, even though you hail from Kentucky, and we lived in Maine for about 10 years, and then you moved out here. And the Maine thing wasn't random. My family's had property there for 50 years, so
yeah.
I took you there. but... You also currently work for ODVA, Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs,
mm-hmm.
and that's a different genre of writing than what you do for the podcast, right?
Yeah, I mean, so I do different things in that job, where it's more of a, I mean, I do some writing, but it's more of a kind of communications type role where I am engaging, you know, kind of from the other side, engaging media outlets on behalf of the agency, responding to media requests. I do a lot of writing speeches and remarks for our director and other leaders of the agency. And then we do some writing for the blog and some other publications that we've done in the past that are features on veterans and some historical stuff that's similar. But I do a lot of website stuff for them. I've done video. So it's more of a comprehensive communications type role.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get back to Maine. So like I said earlier, I moved you to a place where there was an annual accumulation of 120 inches of snow. What things did you learn to do in Maine that you hadn't been able to experience as a young boy in Kentucky?
Snow blow, snow plow,
drive snow shovel,
driving snow shovel. I mean, we did some fun stuff in the snow, right? I did some snowboarding. Mm-hmm. We
you
really liked
skate ski.
We really liked doing cross country skiing. It was a lot of people think Maine, and they think either you know, Portland or the coast, or maybe like the leaves, you know, the leafer thing.
Peepers.
Yeah. But this was a very more rural, very agrarian, similar to Canby in some ways, a small town in extreme northern Maine, about a half hour from the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
So
the only difference is Canby has that many inches of rain and Maine had that many inches of snow.
Yeah. So it was very like, I mean, my experience there is more defined, I think, by just a lot of ways of, you know, things that are common to being a teenager in a small town, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of finding your way in that way. We did hit a moose. But the fact that it was in Maine, I think, is, you know, more just like trivial than like defining of that experience. But I mean, the people of Maine are, I think, unique in some ways. I think there's a certain independence and stoicness that comes with, you know, living in a place where it's not necessarily the easiest to scratch out a life, you know, but you do it sometimes because you don't have a choice. But especially if you do have a choice and you choose to do it, yeah. I think that there's something to admire in that.
Yeah. Salt of the earth people.
Yeah.
So speaking of Maine people, when you... When was the contest when you were a junior?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, please, let's talk about it. This is for Mother's Day. Well, you met someone, you met some very famous people. So you entered a contest.
I did.
You entered a writing contest.
In high school.
In high school when you were a junior. And I'll let you talk about it. And if you don't say all the good stuff, then, of course, being the mom, I'll fill
it in.
I was
a finalist in a contest.
Out of how many people?
I don't remember.
Over 1,000.
Okay. it was a writing contest. It was a short story writing. So I wrote a short story and I was one of the finalists. I didn't win.
You were 12
make
out
it
of,
a big deal.
You were 12 out of like 1,300.
But anyway, Stephen King was one of the judges, one of my idols, and his wife. I think they ran out of like famous Maine authors pretty quick. They're like, Stephen King and Tabitha King?
Tabitha, yeah.
And then Richard Russo, who won the Pulitzer Prize for Empire Falls. But so anyway, those three, and the governor was also involved. So it was a big deal. But there was like a banquet in our honor, and we got to meet the authors and got his autograph. One thing I always remember was he signed the book to me. You know, to Tyler, your number one fan from Steven, which is probably what he wrote for all of them, but I felt like he just wrote it for me.
I'm sure he did. And it was such encouragement.
Yeah, it was.
He, you know, he writes, well, he writes kind of profound things as well, but he writes those ridiculous horror stories, and yet he realized the value of his recognizing young, aspiring writers. The value to them, because he's kind of a big deal, to give you that sort of permanent encouragement.
Well, I think that Stephen King is one thing that I really do admire about him is that, you know, I don't know him personally. I obviously just met him that one time. I've read quite a bit of his stuff, but I think that he has a much... You know, with all of his success and everything, I think that he has a much smaller ego than you might imagine.
Agree.
I think that he recognizes that there are a lot of writers that can say things and write things and need to write things that he can't do. And that everyone's voice and their own experiences and where they come from creates a unique voice and a unique perspective that, that he can't have, but that should be out there, and he wants to encourage that.
So he's not the only famous person that you met and, in fact, have interviewed. What are some of the more memorable interviewees that you've met with over the years?
Oh, man. Well, I always tell people I've interviewed and worked for Larry the Cable Guy. I did an event for him one time. Was a photographer for a show that he did. Did some backstage photography for his team. Not his real name, not his real accent, by the way.
Okay.
His name is Lawrence, I think, is his real... Or Lawrence is like his middle name.
Okay.
Yeah, I think his name is Dan. And he's from like Connecticut or something.
Okay.
So it's just a character that he created. And I met and interviewed Louise Harrison, George Harrison's sister of the Beatles.
Where'd you interview her?
Most of these were in Branson.
Yeah, so, entertainment.
Yeah, entertainment city. I've interviewed ZZ Top, 38 Special. A couple of bands that went through there. Glenn Campbell on his last, you know, he was experiencing Alzheimer's, so he did one last tour. So I got to meet him and photograph his last show in Branson. Who else?
There was another last one there. Andy.
Oh, yeah. That was a big one. Andy Williams.
Yeah, Williams. I loved him when I was a teenager.
Yeah. So I probably did do one of his last interviews before he got sick. It was just a random interview I did about their Christmas show. Christmas was a big deal in Branson at the time. Mm-hmm. So he had a theater in Branson, and just, you know, something for the newspaper I was working for at the time. We were doing a feature on his Christmas show he was going to do. But then later, you know, not too long after that, because I believe the Christmas show ended up having to be canceled or modified, he got sick. We didn't know at the time. It was real mysterious. And then there came out something in one of the tabloids that he had cancer. Their people were like denying it and stuff. My publisher at the time was like really like writing me and like really trying to get me to like get the story. You had to find out. I can't put the screws on them, like make them tell me something if they don't want to, share this private medical information. Like, you know, do you want us to be a tabloid? But anyway, I'd been doing as best I could to try to get the theater people to tell us what was going on. And I remember it was like real cloak and dagger. It was like after hours one day, somebody at the theater called and was like, and I knew him, but he was like, I can't tell you anything, but you should come to the show tonight. And that's all he would say. And so I did show, I got the hint and showed up. And Andy Williams, he made this surprise appearance where he, like, nobody was expecting. It was at one of the Christmas shows that, you know, he was supposed to appear at, but wasn't
about,
at that
about
time.
When was that?
It was, what year?
Yeah.
Would have been like 2011.
Okay.
Or 2000, yeah, probably 2011.
Okay. It had to be before then. Weren't you here at 2010? No, okay.
No.
Okay.
So he came out and he said that he said they did have cancer.
Aww.
And he said he vowed to fight it, and he sang one last song. And I was there to cover that. I did not know what was going on. I didn't know that he was going to come out. Like I said, all I knew was this guy with the theater had said to come. So I, was just kind of sitting and waiting. And when I saw him come out, I had like none of the equipment or things that we have now. So I think I recorded on my cell phone I set my phone on the stage to record, and then went somewhere to try to get pictures. But anyway, posted a story that night that, you know, Andy had confirmed his cancer diagnosis, and I had photos, and then went to bed, and then woke up the next morning, and the story had been picked up by like CNN and like all of these.
So you got basically national or
national
even
coverage.
Possibly international byline or you didn't get a byline, did you?
No, but it was people, quoting that story and linking to it and stuff. So
that must have been quite exciting for you as a very young
someone
journalist.
Called CNN or somebody called me and talked to me over the phone.
I'd forgotten
that morning.
That.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
And then he did end up passing away, which was sad.
Shortly after that.
A few months.
Yeah, I remember him. Okay, so the last thing I wanted to ask you about is
it's almost over.
Yes. How long has it been? How long have we been doing it?
I don't know.
Feels like hours.
Yeah.
Feels
like years.
You're a published author. You have a book that's actually available down at the Book Nook called Reoriented.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Available wherever books are sold. So again,
including Amazon.
I guess I've always, kind of fallen into these places of, my faith of kind of exploring those areas of tension and
controversy. Conflict,
And maybe that's something that's helped me kind of navigate the world that we live in now. But I really firmly believe, and it's from experience, that there's just so much power and really listening to people, really talking things out and thinking things through, and that any time you're kind of your hackles are up or you're just set in you're so sure that something has to be a certain way that you're willing to get angry about it, hurt somebody or whatever, whatever the position, you've gone wrong somewhere. And I think that we would all be served by being willing to on any firmly or deeply held belief. I think that you personally would be served by entertaining the other, the other position or the other positions, because it just helps you kind of humanize other people and people that are maybe in your family, maybe in your friend circle, in your community, and it helps deepen your own worldview and your own humanity and your own understanding about even your own beliefs and the person that you are. So I've kind of done that with evolution, and Reoriented was exploring that attention with the LGBTQ community and Christianity within a college setting. Mm-hmm. So,
and now, was that loosely based on something that had actually happened here in Oregon?
Yeah, there was pretty loosely. Like there was a student group that had tried to start at a Christian college out here and had faced some issues, and that was sort of the jumping off and kind of the framework of the story. But really, it was a lot of. It was a very kind of dialogue heavy book, and really a way to kind of explore some of my own thinking, but really just kind of allow, I think, some different perspectives to be explored.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I've read your book, but I know people who have read it. And one person said to me, I thought he was going to give us the answer.
Yeah.
And I said, no, he gives you the pros and cons for rumination. It's for you to find your own answer. Of course, his book isn't giving you the answer. It's giving you the opportunity, as you said, to explore maybe the humanity behind the different, quote-unquote, sides of the issue.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so we'll end this with the question that you often ask.
Well, I think the answer, and don't mean to interrupt, but okay. I think the answer is to have those conversations. Like that.
Right.
The answer isn't A, B, or C. The right. answer is,
talk about it.
Keep talking about it.
Yeah. So what I was going to say is I'll end this with the question that you often ask, which is there anything else you would like to say that I've failed to query you on?
Oh, I don't think so.
Yeah, because it was like pulling hen's teeth to get you
anyway. I'm not looking to prolong this any more than I have to.
Well, thank you for doing this for me.
Thanks,
it
Mom.
It really meant a lot.
Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This, Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Franke. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This, Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.